Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Freeze frame. You're probably wondering what this is all about and how we got here. Breaking news via the 11 Personnel podcast. The Rams have waived rookie kicker, seventh round pick, Samuel Sloman. And initially we had thought that maybe he would be brought back on the practice squad, but NFL Network is reporting just a few minutes later that actually the Rams are bringing back Austin McGinnis for that practice squad spot, thereby sort of free releasing Samuel Sloman in exchange for Kai Forbath, who is on the roster. The active roster was signed last week, and replacing Samuel Sloman's practice squad opportunity with the kicker that he allegedly beat in training camp. Rich, what are your thoughts?
I'm dizzy. I don't know how to process all of this. Jordan, my thought is that one day I hope that somebody leaks the footage of this mysterious final week session where Samuel Sloman was just so good that he had to be kept on the roster, because it apparently happened, but it's like this mysterious, yeah, he was great when you guys didn't see anything.
Right.
So I'm not saying it didn't happen. Don't get me wrong. But I just will always be baffled kind of by the, I think it's fair to say, disconnect between what you saw, Jordan, and what all of the other beat reporters and even some fans saw, and the decision that ended up being made, because it didn't quite seem to connect. On the other hand, I applaud the Rams for making a move. You never want to double down on a mistake. That's sure. The worst thing you can do. So I applaud them for making the move that they did. And now I guess everybody goes into a brave new world with Kai Forbath.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. And I think, you know, people are asking, why not Liram? Liram Haruhu was really the most accurate in what we saw. In our sessions that we were allowed to watch, we saw Liram as the most accurate. However, Liram Haruhu also had an issue with range and kickoff distance. So that was, as we know, one of the major reasons that the Rams were having issues with Samuel Sloman, is because Sean McVay pinpointed an area publicly. It's very rare for him to do this. Publicly pinpointed an area in which Samuel Sloman needed to perform, and that was kicking out of the back of the end zone against a dynamic deep end zone returner such as Cordell Patterson on Monday night. And he did not do so on 4 of his 5 attempts. And Liram Haruhu was having a little bit of an issue with range, even in a windless stadium as SoFi. I mean, it was a little windy, obviously, yesterday. But, you know, it's a pretty enclosed place. So having an issue with that kickoff distance. Austin McGinnis, you know, he's depth. I don't think he's going to maybe necessarily come in and take Kai Forbath's spot. But really where they're having an issue here with Samuel was the height on his kicks, because they were just getting blocked. He had 4 blocks in 7 games, 3 PATs, 1 field goal. And, you know, you have to get the height on that, first of all, and then you have to get the distance as well. So that was the issue. I haven't seen enough of Kai Forbath yet to know what his range is. His touchback percentage is about the same as Samuel Sloman's, but his average is, his average was like 30%, but that was before the rule change. And then his average post rule change is 65%. So, you know, it's just going to be really, basically what I'm getting at is things are a mess, and never, you should never, somehow find yourself in a kicking competition.
Well, you know what, and this is where I'll give credit to some Rams fans. I mean, this was a big topic of discussion during the offseason when they decided to basically let Greg Zuerlein go. I mean, he's a free agent, but it was pretty clear that they weren't going to re-sign him. And that was a big decision. And at the time, I wrote, and probably we talked about on the podcast, that I understood it. Greg Zuerlein did some amazing things with the Rams. He was an extraordinary kicker at times, but he also had some consistency issues. He had some injury issues. His contract was coming up, so you were going to have to pay him a little bit of money. And obviously, they had some other areas where they needed to spend money. However, and a lot of people made this point, and I understood it at the time, when you go into the great unknown, oh my goodness. I mean, when you're talking about that dipping your toe into the pool of kickers, you don't know what's in that water. And to give up on not to give up on, but to part with Greg Zuerlein, he had some issues. Maybe things were starting to trend a little bit in the wrong direction, but he basically was a known quantity. And doing what they did, I understood it. I supported it at the time, so I'm not going to walk that back now. But this is the flip side. The flip side is you don't know what you're going to get. And that's what happened to the Rams. And it should be said, Jordan, too, that they don't know what they're going to get with Kai Forbath either. I know a lot of fans will be happy about this move and excited, but you're trading one unknown for the other. So you can approach it with hope and believe that things are going to get better, but you're walking into just as many questions as you've left behind.
Yeah, and I do think, like you said, it was good correction by the Rams. This is a football team that I think prior to maybe even this iteration of the Sean McVay era maybe would have stuck with those decisions because for the sake of sticking with them. And honestly, like, it is hard to say because you already let go of one of your seventh round picks in Clay Johnston because he just wasn't clicking. He wasn't getting it. Great kid, but just wasn't completely getting up to speed in the way that he should have been and maybe needed some more time after that season ending knee injury the year prior. I think it's hard to say, okay, well, our other seventh round pick also is not working out at a much more crucial position, So maybe you see if he has something that he showed, especially in crunch time when he was in college, but they just the things that were the main issue were just the things that they publicly wanted to correct but had not been corrected. So, yeah, I mean, it's a complicated situation. It's really hard to get it right on kickers because there's so much stuff, so many variables from kick to kick. And yeah, I agree with you, Rich. I mean, at some point you think, okay, well, would they have been better sticking with the veteran or what, what's the deal here? But I think they're now hoping in Kai Forbath, you do have somebody who's a little bit more experienced. So when the going gets rough, knows how to correct and knows how to sort of tune up some of those variables that they had issues with Samuel Sloman.
Yeah, I agree. And I thought maybe that's the direction they would go after they did part with Greg Zuerlein or after he signed with Dallas. Do you turn it over to a rookie or do you go with somebody who's a little more experienced now? Obviously a team like Indianapolis went with Rodrigo Blankenship and that's been going very well. And my Twitter mentions tell me that the Rams should have drafted him instead. And to which I counter that he was in one of my mock drafts. So you're preaching to the choir a little bit there, but yeah, it's a little bit of a correction to, okay, Kai Forbath is not going to probably be an all pro kicker at this point, but he's somebody who's been through this before. It's not going to be new to him. And we'll see. Jordan, what do you think about, because, Austin McGinnis comes in, do you think there's any kind of situation where maybe one guy handles kickoffs and the other guy handles field goals and PATs? Are they going to get that granular with it if they do decide that they want to keep two kickers around?
Yeah. I asked Sean about this back when training camp started and he was, I would say like the facial expression reaction to the idea of wasting a roster spot on a guy who can't do both things, was not for him. He wants one guy to be able to handle both jobs. However, if it's a necessity at some point that they have to keep two, that's really inefficient football, first of all, to waste a roster spot on a guy who's doing maybe one thing for you. It's really, really inefficient special teams management as well, because, you know, at a certain point, what do you, you know, how you're not really developing a guy long term. If he can never handle a kickoff for you, you're automatically tying one hand behind your back in terms of roster management. And so I don't think they want to go that direction, but if they have to, you know, they've got some insurance on the roster now.
Well, yeah, the situation changes. I mean, I understand what Sean's thinking is there, but he's making those facial expressions at a point when he was hoping for the best and probably believing that one guy could handle all those things. And, you know, the situation's changed here in the last couple months or last few weeks. So, yeah. Hey, I'm down for a good kicker debate here. So I know this is going to be going on for the next little while. And again, I applaud the Rams for the move. I know a lot of people are going to second guess and be very angry about the decisions that they made. And I get it. But kickers are kickers. That's just kind of how it goes.
Kickers, man. That's my catchphrase of the year, I guess. And now we're going to take you back to your regularly scheduled 11 personnel programming. Thanks for bearing with us, guys. Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I am your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Doing well, Jordan. The Rams, 5-2. I'm still not entirely sure they've beaten a great team yet, or even a good team, or even above average team. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. But that defensive performance was really, really something else. And how about that timing, Jordan? Somebody I know wrote a great story on Monday morning all about the Rams' new defense and everything that Brandon Staley is bringing, how they're using those players, how the scheme works. Jordan, you did a great story on that. And how about that timing, right? Then the Rams come out and have a great defensive performance against the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, that's always nice. You know, like I co-bylined that piece. If you guys haven't checked it out over at The Athletic LA, I'll be sharing it out a few more times this week, just because it still held up, which is great. Because sometimes, you know, you'll write a story and it'll be about a player and then he gets hurt, or it'll be about a coach and then they kind of just fall off a cliff and don't perform the way that maybe they had indicated they would in the story. And this was not the case. And I kind of got this sense from Brandon Staley the last week and a half or so that he was kind of going into this game a little bit chippy, not in a overt way, but he is a former Chicago Bears assistant coach. I always wonder, and I think this is true for Sean McVay as well, I always think about how nice it might feel to beat your former team, not necessarily because you have anything against them. You could have had the best experience ever, but they still didn't hire you in the position you're in now with another team. So at the end of the day, you want to show them that you're thriving. It's like, it's like your ex, like you just want to show them, you just want to show them that you're thriving. Right. And so, so I really did think that this was really an important one for Brandon Staley. It was funny. I was working with Ted, our fantastic, film analysis guy. I mean, the way that Ted breaks down film is incredible. And he's really great in this piece, with his Ted's takes, because he takes sort of the anecdotal items within this defense that I'm able to describe, and he actually shows them and gets a little bit even more granular with what the technique is and what the different things are based on the philosophy that I have been studying with Brandon Staley's defense. So if you haven't read it yet, check it out. It still holds up. Their stats are actually a little bit better now that they are the second best scoring defense, which is always funny phrasing to me, because being the second best scoring defense means you're not letting people score on you. So right. They're averaging 17.7 points allowed per game as a defense, and 3.3 in the second half of their last three games, which is remarkable to me.
It's pretty extraordinary, Jordan. And of course, the final score Monday night ends up being 24-10 in the Rams' favor. But the touchdown that the Bears got was not an offensive touchdown. If anybody didn't watch all of the game, there was a fumble that was returned for a touchdown. So that seven of those points do not go on the ledger of the Rams defense. They only allowed 3 points. And again, just how do you look at this, Jordan? Because I know this is kind of a season-long conversation we're having here about quality of opponent. But again, you can only play the team that's in front of you. You can't make your own schedule. And I just thought that the effort that that defense put together, I mean, the Bears did nothing. And I know their offense has been struggling independent of whoever they play, but the run game, they averaged just under 3 yards per carry, so they weren't doing anything there. Nick Foles, I mean, he was under pretty good pressure. He's not the most mobile guy. He's not going to avoid the pressure a whole lot. Rams got to him 4 times with sacks, intercepted him twice. I don't know how much more you can do. There were a couple drives there where the Bears, you know, they did get some tempo going and they got down the field, but they couldn't turn it into anything. They couldn't get in the end zone and they really couldn't sustain much momentum at all. So how do you look at this one, Jordan? I mean, obviously the quality of offense isn't that great, but I thought it was on all three levels. I thought that was a pretty solid defensive performance for the Rams.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily care as much that it wasn't a great offense that they were facing. Like, I think we can establish that the Bears are somewhat fraudulent. I think that a couple of their wins, they squeaked by very, very luckily. They got some bounces that landed their way. And they also were the product of other teams' mistakes. And so I don't think that they were necessarily coming into it like the most 5-1 team I've ever seen. I did not put them at that at all. But that defense is remarkable. Yeah. And so anytime you have a defense like that, that defense, what they do, not just, you know, doing well against other offenses, but they set their own offense up in positions to be successful. Mm-hmm. And then now you have a veteran quarterback. I mean, I don't, you know, Nick Foles is Nick Foles, right? But he's played a lot of football on a lot of different levels. He's savvier than, of course, savvier than Mitch Trubisky. Thank God that experiment's over. But, you know, he's much savvier than him at reading things and seeing things. And I think that the Rams, what I think made this such a decisive win was that the Rams took a look at an actual veteran quarterback who's proven in crunch time. And they looked at a play caller who, it sounds like there's some disconnect between himself and the quarterback.
Yeah.
Well, the Rams look at that and they say, okay, how do we capitalize off of that? How do we assert on defense instead of react? And that's what I think makes this such a decisive win is, you know, the offense, we'll get to the Rams offense, but there are some things very clearly to work out there. However, this defense went from reacting and adjusting during halftime, right? And sort of reacting to what the opposing offenses were showing and then getting it together at halftime and then shutting everyone out after the half. And instead, they came out immediately and asserted. And they asserted and they did not take their foot off the gas the entire game. And so I think that detail specifically makes this a decisive win, regardless of opponent. You look at some of the personnel, the Bears have, I think, a really terrible offensive line, but they really are, they're not, this isn't their first time on the block, you know, like they have the ability to make certain things happen at least, right? Their offense is not good, but there's enough veterans on that, in that group and enough, you know, savvy from Nick Foles and from Matt Nagy that like, it's not, you didn't expect them to maybe roll over as much as they did. Right. So I think that, but in part, I think a lot of that is what the Rams defense was able to achieve. This is the most complete game I've seen from the Rams defense. No, do I think they have played a complete game against one of the top offenses in the NFL yet? No, But this is a stepping stone game that they needed because they understood now what it feels like to assert through the entire game, not let an offense happen to you, to happen to an offense, as Brandon Staley likes to say.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, and I think that was a huge difference from the previous week against the 49ers, where they were just, it seemed like they were on their heels at the start. And hey, again, give credit to the 49ers. We talked about that last week. They had a good plan and they executed it well. But like you said, it didn't seem like that Rams defense really got its feet set until the second half. And on Monday night, it was a much different story. I mean, coming out, they win the toss again every game now, right? What's going on there?
They must have
a weighted coin or something. Anyway, so the Bears get the ball. They pick up one first down. They have to punt near midfield. They get the ball back, three and out. So there you go. Like right there, you're setting the tone for that Rams defense, which was just something very different than you saw in the 49ers game, or certainly like in the Buffalo game, where they really, like you said, is, I think you said it perfectly there, Jordan, Bears repeating, you know, asserting yourself instead of reacting. And that was a big, big difference, I think, in this game, is they were able to do that from the beginning. And I think, I know we'll talk about the offense too, but, you know, you talk about how the Bears defense can kind of set things up for their offense. I think you could say the same for the Rams, you know, that when you get a solid defensive start like that, I think it kind of calms everybody down and you can kind of do what you want to do and not have to feel that pressure to where you're like, uh-oh, now we've got to outscore this team. You can just kind of do what you do. And they did that pretty well. But Jordan, we Leonard Primetime Floyd, right? One of our colleagues at The Athletic came up with a stat, right, about how much more effective he is in a statistical sense, anyway, in those night games, those primetime games, and two sacks against his former team, and an extra quarterback hit there. Got a game ball. I know he was very proud of that after the game, but this is what they needed, right? How many times have we talked about getting that outside pressure and what it can do for the Rams? And I don't know, I guess we'll see if it's sustainable, but for one night, Leonard Floyd provided a lot of it.
I know. For once, someone ended a game with more sacks than Aaron Donald. Isn't that remarkable? That doesn't usually happen. So, you know, when Troy Reader had his three sacks, Aaron's like, okay, well, man, I'm going to go get four. so it was really a couple of things I liked about what they did with their pressure. First of all, they dialed up different types of pressure in a way that I think more aggressive than we'd seen from Brandon Staley in past games. They were blitzing more. You saw Jalen Ramsey do a little bit of a delayed blitz a couple of times, which was really, I think, interesting because I think Jalen Ramsey's way, way smart enough to be able to handle the kind of cadence and timing that you need to do something like that. And so they were dialing up pressure in a variety of different ways. You saw Aaron Donald being effective, you know, Pro Football Focus, 10 quarterback pressures on 36 pass rush snaps, so Nick Foles is being pressured essentially one third of every pass rush snap, which is insane to me. But what he was also doing was helping push the pocket to where Nick Foles was not comfortable and sometimes moving sideways laterally into the arms of other players. And what I really liked too was Leonard Floyd stepping up. So the stats, Kevin Fishbane over at The Athletic Chicago, the original Athletic site, shout out. They found this really cool stat and I'm going to read it to you. So Leonard Floyd in 18 primetime games has 11 career sacks. Okay. In 43, just regular afternoon games, he has 11 and a half sacks. So he is basically producing at over two times the rate in primetime games.
Wow.
Which is like good for Leonard, right? Because the Rams brought this guy in and he was very much a cast off, and the word sounds so harsh, so I hate using it, but you know, he's very, very much a cast off from the Bears because he just didn't sort of live up to their own expectations, had a couple of staff changes. What we heard was he really liked working with Brandon Staley, though, because Brandon Staley saw something in him that was, you know, there's potential there, but he wasn't outkicking his coverage in terms of he could see who Leonard Floyd is and what he's capable of, but he wasn't putting that sort of, okay, you're a top 10 pick, you should have 15 sacks a year kind of pressure on him, because that's just not who Leonard Floyd is going to be for you. And so they bring him into the Rams and they're like, listen, Leonard, what a great name too, by the way. Why do I love that name so much, Leonard? Anyway, they're like, listen, Leonard, we don't need you to get 15 or even 10 sacks this year. It would be great. We don't need that from you. We need you to set a really good edge, to defend the run well, make effort plays, and we need you to step up when your number is called. Well, this past week, his number was called and he comes away with 2 sacks. He gets a game ball and cradles the game ball up at the podium, which was wonderful. Like, he wasn't letting that thing go, and deservedly so, because I think I would have to think as a player, probably more so than a coach, even as a player, it stings when you are just told for 4 years, 5 years that you're not living up to your expectations, but they were someone else's expectations placed upon you.
Right.
And maybe you feel like you weren't being set up to be successful in that way. And so Leonard comes to Los Angeles and they're like, hey man, do your thing. Like, we're going to leave you alone. Like, just do your thing. And is really, really happy here. And I think that that's something notable about this organization too, on a bigger scale, and not to get too far off topic, is the players who come here seem to find just so much comfort. You see it with Jalen Ramsey as well. They're just, be yourself. Don't be a jerk to people. I'm not that anyone would be, but like, be yourself, be kind, stay hydrated, keep the ecosystem intact, and just do your thing. We're going to leave you alone and just like kind of be your buddy and support you. Right. That's kind of what the Rams are. Especially the hydration and ecosystem part. But yeah, that stat is incredible. I am still concerned that the Rams are not consistently dialing up outside pressure, and they're obviously going to, I think at this point, probably address that more so in the draft in the spring than maybe necessarily in, you know, on the waivers or the trade market, things like that, just because they're getting Oboe back, you know, later in the year. So they hope they get him back after the bye. And he was doing really well. Terrell Lewis is stepping up to the plate, made a big stop yesterday, made a big stop Monday night. So, you know, I think that they're thinking things are coming along, but they're probably going to still address that position in the draft. But it was so interesting to see how the pieces started to work together. You know, Aaron Donald creating that interior pressure, forcing at times Nick Foles to just straight up run away from him and into the arms of another player. Justin Hollins was a benefactor of that late in the game. And I liked what they were doing with their front seven. They weren't asking too much of their linebackers, which I thought was notable as well.
Yeah, I thought that was a good all three phase game, and the secondary too. I mean, it goes without saying when you get a couple interceptions, but very good plays there. I mean, Troy Hill deserves some applause for a couple of the plays he made directly leading to the interception on Taylor Rapp, and making a couple other really good plays. Jalen Ramsey comes up with his first interception of the season. So I think the DBs kind of had their ears out a little bit, you know, kind of knowing like, okay, he's, you know, Nick Foles is going to be under some pressure here. He's going to be making some throws that maybe if you're a quarterback, you don't like to make sometimes. And let's keep looking. Let's look for our spots here. And they took advantage of a few of those. But Jordan, I think you said that so well about Leonard Floyd. And I remember when the Rams brought him in, kind of thought, you know, the best case scenario is another Dante Fowler, because you don't want to compare. You know, everybody's different. Everybody's situation is different. But Dante was another guy who was in Jacksonville, very high expectations. The production wasn't there. They got down on him. He got down on them. He got down on himself. And the whole thing just was not going to work anymore. And he got a fresh start in L.A., brought in a very good attitude. Like you said, he, you know, was accepted in the locker room and was accepting of his new role and thrived. And it's a little bit of a different thing that they're asking Leonard Floyd to do. More of that Clay Matthews replacement, than the role that you just described so well. But it seems like he has the potential, at least. We'll see. It's still early. But he has the potential to just kind of settle in there and be his own man, be his own player, and not feel the pressure to live up to the expectations that were on him in Chicago. So that can make a big difference for players, just to be in a new environment and to have somebody like Brandon Staley, who he's already comfortable with. It has to be a big bonus. So we'll see. It's one game. Won't make too much of it just yet, but I think you saw the potential in what that could be and what the Rams were looking at. Jordan, the only question I have left about the Rams defense, at least coming out of this game, the depth now, unfortunately, and my goodness, you look at Terrell Burgess, you talk about people stepping up, and he got in there pretty early on because of the injury to Jordan Fuller. Gives Terrell Burgess a little bit more of an opportunity, and gosh, he makes a couple good plays there, and then suffers. We don't know yet, but suffers what looked to be a pretty serious ankle injury. I know they showed him having to get an air cast and having to leave the field on the cart. So anytime you see that, it's not a good thing. But what do we think about the depth there, Jordan? Because now you've got a guy like Nick Scott coming in and playing some significant role. They still have enough there, knowing how important those safeties are to what Brandon Staley likes to do?
Yeah, that's a big blow to them, because not only was Terrell Burgess filling in for Jordan Fuller, but also Terrell Burgess is a really good football player. Yeah. And at some point is going to have a much more featured role within the defensive backfield. Brandon Staley really, really likes his safeties, like really likes them. How much John Johnson is calling signals for them. He does not come off the field. They use their safeties as linebackers sometimes. They use them as dimes sometimes. They use them even in sort of a larger nickel package. So they are a very commanding presence on the field. I thought Nick Scott came in after Terrell Burgess got hurt. I thought Nick Scott did some good things. He was always around the ball in terms of swarming to the tackle. What Nick Scott has to be, if he's going to be the guy rotating in, because obviously they're going to play some Taylor Rapp as well, but when they do some of these sub packages where they add the extra defensive backs in sort of linebacker support or middle of the field support, you sometimes will want that third safety in there. And so when he is in there, when Taylor Rapp and John Johnson's on the field and maybe Nick Scott has to rotate in, all he has to do is be consistent, and he is one of the more consistent, just all-around stable guys on the roster. People gravitate toward Nick Scott because he is just solid for them. He's really solid on special teams for them. This is a young man who is someone who is going to be around for a long time, one of the very rare, quote-unquote, special teams lifers that you don't see in the league anymore. I mean, I think it was Heath Farwell and Colin Jones were the last ones, right? So these are guys who make their mark on special teams, and they stay with the team for 8 to 10 years because of just how solid they are. And so if Nick Scott does get repped in, which I would assume they'll re-scheme and limit if Terrell Burgess is out for a significant amount of time, they just have to make it through this game coming up against Miami, because they have a bye week on the other side of it, which is time for everybody to rest. And then they get Jordan Fuller back after that. Right, so you can buy some time if you make it through Miami and you scheme around it. And obviously having Nick Scott stand up and just be stable. He doesn't have to be the guy making all the plays. He just has to be where he's supposed to be and be stable. And I think they can certainly work around it. Where I obviously am concerned is, Miami, a little bit up and down at times, but they do have Mike Gesicki, who ironically Nick Scott played with in college at Penn State, but knows his game very well and knows how if he really gets going and can show consistency, he's very, very hard to defend as a tight end in the middle of the field, on the outside, anything you do. So I am concerned about their depth there. You know, you go from the beginning of the season where you're like, what are you going to do with all of these outstanding defensive backs that you have on your roster? And then Brandon Staley's like, well, actually, I'm going to rotate them in a crap load. And so you really, that's another thing, Rich. Didn't you love seeing, just from a football watcher's perspective, the creativity? This is really where you saw Jalen Ramsey really start to thrive within that star position. Yeah, he got beat. He did get beat a couple of times Monday night. Got lucky, I think, on one or two of those, especially that long deep pass to Nick Foles at the end. And then there was one, I believe, earlier on that he missed that could have been a touchdown but wasn't. You know, and it was because of, by the way, it was because of pressure from the outside that made Nick Foles miss the throw. But it would have definitely been six. And so Jalen, I thought, played very well other than those two things. But also you really saw, I think, a lot of that secondary rotation that I've been just like ranting about and rambling about since training camp. You kind of saw it. You saw it in action, and Jalen was playing close to the slot. He was blitzing. He was in run support. He would kick out to the outside at times. Troy Hill had a nice game on the outside, batted down a pass that Taylor Rapp intercepted. You know, I think guys are, I think they're, I mean, I don't know. I kind of get a sense that they're just like, they have fun in this system. I really think so, especially in that secondary where you're rotating. And now I've gone off on some sort of tangent for you, Rich, because I know we were talking about Terrell Burgess. But basically, they have a wealth of talent at defensive back. And so if they've been rotating this much already, I just think that as they scheme around missing a guy like Terrell Burgess, I just think you're going to see them just continue to rotate and just kind of trust the guys that know the system to be where they need to be.
Yeah, and this is what Sean McVay was looking for. I mean, if you look back to the things he said when they hired Brandon Staley and the things we heard, you know, from front office sources and things like that, this is what he wanted, and this is what he's getting, and it's working pretty well in terms of Brandon Staley and that ability to be so multiple, to, you know, not just run one thing at you. He's going to run so many different things at you, and it's going to continue to evolve, because you just mentioned, you know, what's coming up, the Tua Bowl is coming up against Miami, so a whole different element, and they don't, obviously they have a lot of tape of Tua from Alabama, but they don't have pretty much anything at all from him running that Miami offense and how he's going to like to use those offensive weapons there. So it's going to take a little bit of time, and then of course coming after that, after the bye week, then you've got Russell Wilson and an offense that is always difficult. So the fact that the Rams already have shown so much, and those players already have shown the ability to do so many different things, I think is only going to pay more dividends down the line against some of these offenses that they're going to play. But just to put a point on what you said, Jordan, Jalen Ramsey, I mean, I was thinking about it, and it seems hard for me to think of a cornerback having such an impact on the game like that. I mean, you can look at a top cornerback and say, okay, that guy's great. He locked down that number one receiver. He locked down that side of the field for the entire game. And that's good. Don't get me wrong. That's an admirable quality. But the number of things that Jalen Ramsey can do now in this Rams defense, and the things that he can do well, and we're only seven games in, you know, after no offseason, no OTAs, anything like that, I would probably think he's still just kind of learning, and they're learning what he can do within that defense. But wow, like you said, never going to be perfect. And there were a couple plays there where if they had, you know, if Nick Foles did have another second there to throw the ball, it might have been a different story. But again, you're talking about how many times during the game is Jalen Ramsey in those kind of high leverage situations, and how many times does he make the play? And it's an extraordinary number. So to see that kind of evolve, and to see Brandon Staley's vision for Jalen Ramsey kind of come to life on the field, I think is very very intriguing to see. And you can see why the Rams put so much money into Jalen Ramsey, knowing how important he was going to be.
To the future. And you know, Oh, I'm sorry, Rich. I totally interrupted you. I just got so excited. one thing that still that baffles me is that I still get people in my mentions who are, or comments that who are mad that he's playing sometimes in the slot. And it's like, oh, don't get cute and all this. I would like to directly address those people at this time.
Okay.
Here's my statement. I as strongly as possible disagree with the logic that dictates that it's too cute to play your best player closer to where all of the action is happening. I think that there are so many things that are valuable in having a lockdown corner, which just because Jalen sometimes is in the slot, by the way, does not mean that he's not still the lockdown outside corner if they need him to be.
Right.
Let's say you have a Tampa Bay Buccaneers situation where, first of all, big challenge. Second of all, you probably need to have someone floating with Mike Evans. You just do. That's just the type of player, or like a Arizona Cardinals situation. Yes, you know that you're going to need to cover Larry Fitzgerald from the slot, but your immediate emergency attention must go to DeAndre Hopkins on the outside. So yes, Jalen Ramsey is going to still be that sort of island guy, right? Mm-hmm. But as teams sort of gravitate away from wherever the quote unquote lockdown outside corner is, and great, if you can shut down one side of the field, fantastic, right? But what teams can do now, because they have so much more versatility, they're using more receivers thanks to Sean McVay and his 11 personnel. Other teams across the league are using 11 personnel at a higher rate than ever before. And that means that they, if they see one side of the field is locked down, they're like, okay, great. How can we turn that into an advantage for us? Because we don't even have to pay any attention to that corner who can make the big play. And sure, that means that we're maybe not targeting our number one receiver, but here's our very close number two receiver who had 800 yards instead of 1,000 last year. And we're going to work him out of the middle of the field and using sort of shorter underneath options that are away from wherever this corner is. And instead of just thinking of the field vertically in two sides, you are now thinking of it vertically and then halved into quadrants instead of just one side of the field and the other side of the field. Now you're able to work it in quadrants and you have three out of the four quadrants available to you to work the passing game. And you're not even going toward that lockdown corner on the far side that you very much want to avoid. Mm. So teams being able to turn that into an advantage is something that this defense, Sean McVay and Brandon Staley, both very much wanted to avoid. Instead, they're going to say, okay, you're not going to throw to Jalen. Well, we're going to actually maybe put Jalen right up in your face, you know? So, I'll tie this up because I am in danger of ranting for a long time on this, but I really am disappointed, I think, in people who still come into my mentions and say, I've had it with him in the middle. This is too cute and you need someone guarding this person. I'm worried about this guy. And I'm like, chances are most of the receivers that you see now are not staying in one spot, first of all. So why should the corner,
right. First
of all? Second of all, if you can open up every single quadrant on your field to the threat of your lockdown corner, you have to do it every single time. Right. If you aren't, I laugh at you. If you're the coach who says, you know, we're just going to maybe keep him on one side, you're only playing with 10 players and not 11. End rant.
Do you yield back the balance of your time?
I yield my time.
Okay. I can't really say anything. I think you said it perfectly. I don't understand why people would complain about that. It not only does it make sense in theory, but seeing it on the field, it makes sense. So again, if perfection is your standard, then you're always going to end up a little disappointed in any player in any team. But to see how this is working out, I don't know how you could argue with it. And it's interesting because, you know, when the Rams got Jalen Ramsey last year, they didn't have Brandon Staley. I don't know at that point whether Sean McVay was contemplating a change in defensive coordinator. I have no idea. But it's funny how that ended up working out so well. I have a lot of respect for Marcus Peters in the game that he plays, but I don't see Marcus Peters doing this stuff if he's on the roster right now. Maybe he could. Maybe he proves me wrong. But to get a guy like Jalen Ramsey who fits this skill set so perfectly, and then to have a coordinator who knows how to take advantage of it, again, maybe we'll see. You know, again, there's going to be bigger tests to come. So maybe things won't work out quite as well as we think they do, or as they have so far, but I don't think you can argue it to this point. And credit to Brandon Staley for you know, coming up and scheming that up, and credit to Jalen for executing it so well. Jordan, let's pivot to the offense a little bit, because hard for me to judge. You know, we started out talking about, you know, judging the defense on a curve, because the Chicago Bears offense isn't very good. So do we apply the same standard to the Rams offense? They do put up 24 points against a very good Bears defense. And knowing that in the past two matchups in 2018 and in 2019, the Rams only totaled 23 points in those two games. Now, not the same coaching staffs, not the same personnel, but this was a Bears defense and some specific players who had given the Rams offense a lot of trouble in the last couple of years. So again, I know we're going to talk about some things that maybe weren't perfect, but how do you grade it overall? Did you think that was an above average performance from the Rams offense, or just maybe slightly above average?
I think maybe like a B minus sometimes, okay, wavering on B plus. And it just kind of depends. I thought that 2 minute to 4 minute on either side of the half was an F.
What was going on, by the way? Now, I'm interrupting you, and I'm sorry.
No, that's,
but
please, I want to hear your rant.
Are these guys trying to like just out puzzle the other one? Like, what is going on here? Like the Rams have a chance to take a timeout, which I think would have left like about a minute and 40 on the clock, yeah, if I have that right, and they don't take a timeout, and then the Bears punt to the Rams 10 with about a minute left, and you go, okay, there's no way, like there's only a minute left, they got to go, you know, 90 yards, and we know they're not going to attempt a long field goal probably, so they're going to take it into halftime, and then they start throwing it, and Goff almost gets picked off like twice, and I'm going, gosh, you guys, like what are you doing here? Anyway, I agree. That was a very puzzling a sequence there, but the Rams were able to get away with it.
Yeah, and Sean McVay, it was actually kind of funny. So you know how sometimes coaches, like I think Cliff Kingsbury just did this week, some coaches will go into their press conference and reporters will be like, hey, you know, good question about a good positive question. And then they'll ask about a miscue or a mistake. And then the coach will like clutch their pearls and be like, is anyone, and Dabo Sweeney does this too, is anyone going to ask a good question? It feels like we didn't even win.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, okay, save it, first of all. Second of all, what I think is really funny that Sean McVay does instead is, like, yesterday was a very, I think, decisive win. As people are asking about some of the characteristics and moments in the win, Sean McVay kept bringing up this 2 and 4 minute period. And he kept going, like, you could just tell it was such a bad taste in his mouth. Like, he just kept going, like, I cannot wait to work through that. It wasn't even the topic at hand. I think I asked him about what they did, certain things that maybe he could share that they did at practice to sort of up the urgency all week last week, because they lost so bad against San Francisco and then came out and were very definitive in their win against Chicago. And he started out by saying, yeah, urgency, practice. And he ended the entire sort of monologue by talking about that 2 and 4 minute and how terrible it was. And I was like, okay, well, thank you. I mean, just good, you know, yeah. Self-awareness is good. But I was like, okay, Sean, like, you're teeing yourself up here. Like, you don't, we didn't ask you,
you
about
that. You just know he's like walking the dog this morning, just still muttering about that sequence. And then, not to get too sidetracked, because we do want to talk about the offense, but then I'm sitting there going, okay, it's fourth down, and the Bears don't make the Rams punt. Like, they could have caught, they weren't going to do anything, but you never know. You can have a bad snap. You can, you know, you can go all out and try to block it. You, any number of things could happen.
Right.
But Matt Nagy is just like, no, I'm good. We'll just go into halftime here. I'll keep this timeout in my pocket and not make them punt. And it looked like they showed the sideline, and it even looked like McVay was kind of standing there like, we're going in? Really? We're not going to punt? Like, and I just thought, gosh, these two guys, like, they both didn't know what to do with that last, like, 2 minutes of the half. But anyway, yeah, very, very strange. So
yeah, it was like textbook overthinking, I think, on both sides. And we see Sean McVay get into this sometimes when he veers out of how can I scheme my team to do well, and what is my team doing well? And he goes more into, what do I do to outfox the other coach? Yeah. And so that was just and I was on with Chicago Radio this last week, and they were asking me about that very topic, because apparently they see that happen a lot with Matt Nagy and who is a great coach, but also does tend to overthink sometimes. And so, they were asking me about that, and I was like, am I looking in a mirror right now? And it just was, it was really interesting, because they literally can extrapolate some of those moments where they see maybe some of the overthinking happen. What I also did not like about that period was it did not seem, and please pardon my crassness here, it did not seem very ballsy. And I would really like to see some of those flashes that we did see in Buffalo when they were down by so much, but playing with a sense of, listen, like, we're just going to go for it. We're just going to kind of all be on the same wavelength, and we're just going to be sort of gunslingers and really just do our thing and do our thing and not worry about the fact that we're down 25, not worry about the other team, not try to do the chess match with the opposing coach. But we're just going to go for it. Like, we're going to regroup and just go for it. And I think that there are some instances where I wonder about that, because I think that you don't see Jared Goff get many of those opportunities to do those things, right? Am I kind of accurate in that? I mean, I've only been here for a few months, but it just doesn't feel like Jared gets that many opportunities to do it.
Right.
He's pretty even keel. Like, I have no real reason to believe that he couldn't if they did. I mean, I thought he played really well in those moments against Buffalo.
Right.
Right. So I'm kind of like, well, why don't you go make something happen? Why don't you assert, you know, and we know what it looks like.
Right.
So I guess I don't really take the conservatism in terms of, because also we've been given a taste of what the other stuff looks like. Too. We saw Sean McVay basically just go to his roots in that Buffalo game and really just kind of throw out the constructs of what he believes, you know, coaching and conservative decision making and protecting, you know, X, Y, and Z. You kind of just saw him throw it out, and he was just like, let's play some freaking football. And right. I think I would like to see that more from the Rams. I think they're capable of it. I think I would like to see that more, particularly in those types of situations, because I think that could separate them, especially when they're going up against these NFC West teams who are playing these wild games. You just have to make the most of every single possession.
And that would have been a great opportunity. I mean, you look back, I know we're dissecting a very small part of a game that the Rams ended up winning, right. But it could have gone the other way. And you look at it, okay, I'm looking at my notes right now. They get the sack, right? They get a Leonard Floyd sack with just about a minute 45 left on the clock. They have two timeouts still in their pocket. They don't take one, and the Bears punt. with 108 left in the half, but the Rams are backed up to their 10. And it was just like, and then they went for it. You know, then they tried to actually kind of move the ball down the field. And that's a great example of what you're talking about there, Jordan, is like if you take the time out there, you make them punt, you get the ball with maybe, I don't know, a minute 40, even if you're still back there at the 10, it's like, all right, now let's go for it. We're up 10-3. If we score, if we drive down and score, we're going to, you know, really kick them in the gut. They're going to be down 17-3. We're going to get the ball to start the third quarter. We can put this game away. Like, that's a real kind of aggressive attitude about it. And it just kind of felt like they were trying to split the difference a little bit. I'm not sure why you don't take the time out there if you are intending to go for it a little bit, because they certainly would have had more time and, you know, they could have gone tempo and just tried to speed it up and move the ball. But I don't know, it seemed like they were kind of caught somewhere in the middle between, we kind of want to go for it here, but right, we kind of don't. And when you're caught in the middle, as we know, that usually, you know, it doesn't lead to anything very good.
Commit to something.
Yeah.
It could be a complete disaster, but at least you've gone all in. And if you're worried about interceptions, maybe don't. I mean, the decisions that Jared made, a couple of those passes were not great, but maybe put the football on the ground or, run some of the, run some of the things that are successful with some of your veteran players and your consistent players. Give it to Johnny Munt, man. Like,
there you go.
that guy stepped up yesterday. I know we're extrapolating four total minutes in a long game, but it is important because in those moments where you have an identity crisis, those good teams capitalize off of that. The Bears, I don't think, are a good team, so they didn't. But in moments where you are suffering an identity crisis on the field, that is when a good team will capitalize, and they will not have that leeway moving forward. So, I really liked you talked about tempo, Rich. I really liked that play they ran with Josh Reynolds and honestly that drive where they went tempo a couple of times and then right at the very end when maybe they were not expected to, because they saw a cover zero blitz and they worked on a play in practice where Josh Reynolds switched places with the running back and then was able to sort of peel out off to the left and get a step on his guy out of the backfield. And they went tempo, and they probably would. Jared Goff said after the game that they probably would not have been able to execute the play. And we've actually seen a similar play fail when they did not go tempo. And so now that they're basically running the exact same play, but they went tempo on it instead, and it was a Josh Reynolds touchdown. I thought that was great use of tempo. And on that drive, they went tempo a few times as well. And that, I think, was the right sort of sprinkling. I know I love my food metaphors. It's like the right amount of Parmesan cheese on the pasta.
I thought it was great. Yeah, I could tell as soon as they kind of the way that they broke the way that they ended the previous play and they were kind of eyeing that Bears defense, I was like, okay, they got something going here. It wasn't actually until after the touchdown that I noticed that Josh Reynolds was in the backfield, which was a really nice touch. And the way that they read that, I mean, just that was a great play and really, really nicely executed as well. So, Jordan, so, you know, I'm an unreliable narrator on this subject. I admit my own biases and my own, the way that I see the game. The play calling, not just the play calling, but maybe the whole scheme, the whole design of the offense against the Bears. I kind of came around because, you know, again, I thought, you know, I tweeted in my usual snarky way, you run the ball twice to start the game, you get 16 yards and then you pass it six straight times. I'm like, there you go. That's here they go again. But the more I watched, the more I kind of sat back and saw what Sean McVay was trying to do, I kind of thought, okay, I kind of get it now. And I think he felt like he maybe needed to do something different against that Bears defense, maybe than they had done in the previous couple games, again, going back to 2018 and 2019. And this was indeed a very, very different, you know, type of game plan, a different type of attack. But what did you think? They still, I think, got a little bit pass happy at times. They did come back to the run, obviously, when they were trying to run out the clock, when they had a 2-touchdown lead, things like that. The run game was very effective. So was it... you know, was it just enough? Was it not enough? Was it, where was the balance there? What did you think about the way that Sean McVay tried to run that offense?
There's a couple things. I agreed with you with being confused about the amount that they were passing, in terms of the choppiness of the rhythm of it. And sort of how it started to skew, but then they reestablished Malcolm Brown and he scored a great touchdown and that really got them going. They really did, I think, some nice things in terms of some of their route concepts. What I really liked was all of the boot protection that they gave Jared Goff, because they did it. I mean, it was like, man, I have a hard time hearkening back to a game where they've used more of that. And they really were affecting that defensive line in doing so. And Jared has the receivers who can then kind of get open downfield and then make plays, even if it's a shorter pass, make plays happen after the catch. And I thought that was really well designed, because that's, I mean, there was not, you come into this game and this defensive line is such a formidable opponent. And it's like the number one thing circled on the whiteboard is this defensive line. And so I really think they executed those protections very, very well. I thought that was smart. In terms of some of the rhythm of the calling, I think I was with you where I was confused, especially that first drive. I was like, what a fiasco, right? But then they settled in. And I think Sean found his rhythm. Jared Goff, you know, he was a little erratic, missed a couple of easy throws that I think he normally would make, but you know, he ended up settling in as well. He did not, of course, put them in danger of losing the game at all. Right. And so I think, you know, all around they got it together. I think I'm still, sometimes when you see a play caller, and in the past with Sean McVay coached games, you can really feel that rhythm. It's not that you know what's coming, but you feel the rhythm of it and the comfort of the players who are in that rhythm. I'm having a hard time, I think, sometimes with these last few games in finding that from Sean. And I don't think that's necessarily like he's calling the wrong plays. I don't want to go that far. Right. I just think that I'm just having trouble. And I'm like, if I'm watching it, and I'm having a little trouble establishing that cadence, I wonder how it feels to play in it, you know? And so I it's just something to think about and kind of keep an eye on, because I do think that they did some really, really nice things on offense. They obviously put up 24 points on a defense that was only allowing 19.3 per game coming into the game. So they did a very nice job in that regard. They have they're a very complete defense. It's a phenomenal defense, the Bears defense. So, you know, even if they are as a team are fraudulent, that defense is the real deal. So I think there is a lot to hang your hat on in that regard. But, you know, if Sean's bringing up some of these things that were sloppy in his press conference, I'm going to do it too. You know, like those are not off limits. And so I have yet to see, I think, a fully complete offensive performance against a really good defense. And I don't think Monday night was it either. Although I think there were some promising things again, in terms of when they went tempo, not when they didn't go tempo, when they maybe should have, but instead when they went tempo on some of those drives. And then also, you know, a couple of the protections that they designed for Jared Goff. And then getting, you know, maybe lesser heralded playmakers involved when, you know, they're missing Tyler Higbee with the hand injury, and then getting Josh Reynolds involved as well. Malcolm Brown doing a nice job, and really, again, they didn't find opportunities for Cam Akers. But again, both of their running backs through most of the game were averaging 5 and respectively 6 yeah. yards per carry in terms of Malcolm Brown and then Darrell Henderson. So at that point, it's almost like that combination might have been the hot hand in that regard. And so you don't really go away from that and take reps away from those two guys. So they're still working that out as well. They're running back by committee. I think it still counts as a committee if you do it with two, right? Is that sure. like the definition of committee?
Yeah. A party of two. A party of two.
Yeah. Running back party of two. Yeah. but yeah, that's, I mean, I'm kind of all over the place, Rich, because I think they are too. So, you know, but, yeah. but that's not necessarily a bad thing. If you can streamline the edges, then it's okay to be all over the place because it's hard to plan for. But you got to streamline the edges. And you can't, like I said, you can't have an identity crisis midway through the game.
Right.
Because good teams will capitalize on that.
Right. And what you're talking, it is a very difficult thing to describe, but it's like you know it when you see it. When you talk about yeah. that rhythm, and anybody, you know, if Rams fans have watched the last few seasons, you saw that in 2017 and 2018. And that was really a big difference last year. It's just, they just didn't have that. And that was like a season long problem. I mean, it got better here and there in different games, but that was a problem throughout last season. And I thought early on we've seen glimpses of it. We've seen more glimpses of it this year than we did last year, where you kind of go, okay, that's a Sean McVay drive. That's the kind of drive that the Rams want to have. And you've already seen it more this year, I think, than you did all of last year. But I think they can still stand a little bit of improvement there. I agree 100% with you about the bootleg. And just getting him in that comfort, getting Jared in that comfort zone. He did a very good job. He was you know, a little bit uneven, but the one thing he did a very good job of was spreading the ball around. And yeah. talking about Josh Reynolds, I mean, he leads the team with 8 targets, ends up with 4 receptions for team high 52 yards. But across the board there, I mean, you look at the receptions, Cooper Kupp 6, Josh Reynolds and Gerald Everett 4, Johnny Munt 3, Robert Woods only 3, Darrell Henderson with 2. And the targets, again, nobody more than Josh Reynolds 8, and they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different guys with at least 3 targets. So very good job of moving the ball around and doing a lot of things. And those guys did a good job as well. Johnny Munt, you know, like you said, comes out of nowhere with 3 catches, and Josh Reynolds with some nice catches. So it wasn't one of those games where it's, you know, Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp or bust. They had quite a few people making plays. And we didn't even mention the fact, by the way, that the Rams didn't play they played without Tyler Higbee, who wasn't able to go in that game because of his hand injury. So you would think coming in, wow, that's going to take away a big target. That's going to really impact what they do. But other guys were able to step up, and it really didn't really feel that loss. I don't think during the game. So credit to those guys.
You know, we really love having you guys comment on our podcast and share our feedback. Yesterday, Bryson Hopkins was active for his first NFL game, and we got some Player X tweets, and that really made my day because you guys are just the best. We love interacting with you and that you guys are enjoying what we're recording for you. You can go subscribe to The Athletic and also to the 11 Personnel podcast on The Athletic, their app or the website. And when you do so, you get one of my favorite things in the world, Rich. What is it?
You get a great discount.
I love a discount. Don't forget to also go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe to us there. You can leave us a review, hopefully 5 stars. You can also write us a note. We read everything and we love interacting with you guys. Make sure you guys are keeping up with us over the next couple of weeks. We've got some really fun stuff coming out for you, some features, some great podcast interviews coming up as well, sort of this on the state of the Rams, but a very deep dive, a smart look at the Rams. And thanks again for listening.